Our study this morning is going to deal with the very first social institution that God put on this earth, and that is the family. It is critical to our well-being. It is critical to society. Every individual, old or young, married or not married, is impacted by family. I assure you that Satan knows the value of family. And the reason I know it is because he's going all out to destroy it. Instead of security and love and peace, he's trying to foment division, trouble, heartache, and even divorce in families. How is he so successful? Why do his plans reach fruition and families are in such a mess today? We want to talk about Satan's attack on the family. May I suggest to you that one of the reasons he's so successful is because he has what the Apostle Paul calls schemes. We are not unaware of the schemes of the devil. It had to do with a man that had been withdrawn from and the need now after he repented to welcome him back into the fellowship. And Satan would scheme to try to get that man's soul by making him feel not wanted. He's ever at work to undermine God's plan. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 26, he talks about the devil's snares or traps. We're going to be talking about some of the traps Satan plants to try to undermine and ruin the family today. He's good at setting traps. Traps catch the unaware, and they may not escape. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3, Paul was concerned that the Corinthians would be deceived by the devil's craftiness. He knows how to go through the back door. He knows how to use things that seemingly are innocent to accomplish his purposes. Here in Corinthians, they had men that called themselves apostles, but they were false apostles. He's very crafty. And so we want to spend a few minutes looking at the devil's attack on the family. We're going to begin our study in Luke chapter 12. If you're familiar with Luke chapter 12 and verse 13 following, you're aware of the fact that Jesus' main discussion here is not the family, but a sense of priorities. He had been talking to his disciples about the greatest mission men have been given to preach the gospel to the world. And there was a man in the audience that interrupted the discussion and he told Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." That's verse 13. Here's the master teacher, the Son of God, talking to his apostles about this elevated subject. This fellow's thinking about money, things. Is there anything wrong with wanting your inheritance? Nothing. But when that becomes something that detracts you from those things that are important, when it affects your priorities, and that's what Jesus deals with in this text. This man decided he would build new barns where to store his crops and his goods. Nothing wrong with that except that. It was the thing he talked about, thought about, and spent his energy on. It was his whole life. Everything else was subservient to that one thing. Jesus calls his attitude one of covetousness or greed that rules out, that pushes out the spiritual priorities. And finally, in verse 20, Jesus said, "You're a fool." God said, "You fool. This night your soul is required of you. Now who will own what you have prepared?" So is the man who is rich toward himself, but not rich toward God. What does that have to do with the family, one might say? This sense of priorities. That we are concerned about our things we own, the things we possess, about our houses and our cars and our bank accounts and those kind of things, crowding out the priorities of family. When God made the family, the very beginning, in Genesis chapter 2, the man was alone. He did not make a woman so the man could have children. In the animal kingdom, there are some that the male has the children. He could have done that with this man. I'm glad he didn't. There's nothing in Genesis 2 about children. What it says in Genesis 2 and verse 18, God saw that the man was alone. I'll make a helper for him. Something to satisfy this problem of needing someone to talk to be with, to share your dreams with, to share your disappointments with, to laugh with, to cry with, to be a companion. The word companion talks about sharing life together. And so he made a woman. That's why God made woman and brought them into the relationship we call family. Marriage, husband and wife, companionship. Nothing wrong with having children. We need children. Solemn responsibility, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what happens? People get married. And they may get married because they want to satisfy their passions. That in and of itself is not wrong. They may get married because they're in love, and so it should be. But once they get married, there are the daily affairs of life. You got to get ready to go to work. You got to go to work. If you're a lady, you may work, and then you may have the house to clean. You may have supper to cook. Along comes children, and there's all the demands of taking care of children. And what happens? Men and women don't make time to talk, to laugh, to weep, to make memories, to share life together. Satan knows what it does to a family. And they grow apart. And the doors open where somebody out there takes the time to take an interest in them. And their affections are diverted. But it all starts right here in Genesis 2. God made woman to be a companion to man. The Song of Solomon is a tribute to healthy romantic love. You know the story. It's the story about a young woman. There are two men who want her. One is the king. He can give things. He can give a palace. He can give servants. He can give the finest robes, things. But there's a shepherd boy. He can't give all those things. But I'll tell you what he can give. He can give company. He can give time. He can give a listening ear. Song of Solomon, chapter 2, beginning in verse 10. She thinks about her shepherd boy. She says, "My beloved responded and said to me, 'Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. Behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for the pruning of the vines. The voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land. The fig tree has ripened its figs. The vines in blossom have given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. O, my dove, in the cleft of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your form is lovely.'" Men and women get busy with work, taking care of the yard and the house. And the kids, of course. There's all kinds of things when you have children. And there's no time to smell the flowers together and look at the sky. Maybe a vacation once a year. For a little while. But what about every day? What about the other 350 days of the year? Somebody at work may take time to listen. A neighbor may take time to listen, to smile with you, to cry with you. And thus, affections are diverted. The devil knows this. He knows the importance of this. And that's why we need to make time for companionship, for company, for friendship. Over in chapter 5, verse 16, his mouth, talking about this shepherd, his mouth is full of sweetness. He is wholly desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend. Would to God, after we've been married not just 5 days, but 5 years, not just 5 years, but 50 years, we could say, this my mate is my friend. I'm not just tied by a contract. I'm not just tied by a bond of marriage. I'm tied by friendship. I enjoy spending my life together with my friend. Satan's cunning, he's wise, and he's deceptive. If he can upset that balance, you've got to spend time other places. You've got to take care of other things. But companionship, time with your mate is a priority. And Satan is trying to disrupt that. One of the important facets of the marital realm, Paul addresses it here in the letter to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, is the conjugal duties that husbands and wives have, the marital duty of marriage. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2, he said, because of immorality, because of the danger that's out there to satisfy your passions in wrongful ways, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. He goes on to say, verse 3, let the husband fulfill his duty toward his wife and also the wife to her husband. He then goes in verse 5 and says, stop depriving one another. Maybe the Corinthians were doing this very thing that we've been talking about. I don't know how many hours a day you had to work if you lived in Corinth. Maybe there were other things that got in the way. But evidently, this part of their relationship was suffering. And he said, stop it. Stop depriving one another, except it be by consent for a season or a time. And note what he said here in verse 5. He said, come together again, lest Satan tempt you for your lack of self-control. We're talking about Satan's attack on the family. You can go read for yourself. Talk to marriage counselors. When they ask people, why are you having problems? This is one of the top reasons. A lack of satisfaction and joy in this part of the relationship. It doesn't necessarily happen intentionally. It's just things get in the way. And then you're tired. And there's other thoughts. And this part of the marriage does not take a top shelf priority. And so marriages fall apart. There's affairs. Violation of this most special and sacred relationship. Make time for that part of your marriage. Over in Deuteronomy in chapter 6, and verse 6 and 7, God was talking to the nation of Israel, preparing them to be His people. He talked about the family. God was concerned about the husbands and the wives, but He's concerned about those children that are coming up that someday will be husbands and wives. And so here's what He tells the parents, verse 6. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently. Not teach them. Teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them on Wednesday night before you go to Bible class. No. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand. There shall be as frontals on your forehead. And you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. But I've worked all day. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning. I got ready. I drove to work. You know what it's like driving in Houston traffic? I worked all day. I'm tired. What about tomorrow? Same thing. What about Wednesday or Thursday or Friday? Same thing. Oh, and this weekend I've got to work too. Oh, did I tell you about the yard? I've got to do the yard. Or maybe there's a deal for the kids, entertainment, a baseball game or a soccer game or something. It's Sunday. We're going to train our kids. We're going to take them to church. Good. But that's not this. Materialism gets in the way. Children are growing up that don't know God. Oh, they can say God. They can talk about Jesus a little bit. They don't really know the grace and the mercy and the power and the love, the majesty, the responsibility of service to God. The wonderful hope of heaven that surpasses anything in this life. And so the devil's smart. Okay, I can't get you. I tell you, that little boy, that little girl, I'll get them. All you got to do for me is just neglect them. I'll take care of the rest. He's smart. What's important to us? If the devil can direct our attention to other things, the things that God emphasizes, no longer take precedence. Here's a letter that Titus to Titus, a young preacher, preaching on the island of Crete. And so in chapter 2, as he tells him what to teach about, in Titus chapter 2, verse 4, encourage the young women to get a career, to be sure you get a college degree so they get a good paying job. Is that it? To love their husbands. Mothers, do you ever talk to your daughters about how to love a husband? What's involved? Grandma, do you ever talk to your granddaughters about that? Maybe you talked about going to Disney World or Six Flags or something. But what about this? Train them to love their husbands, to be a mama, to love their children, to delight in being a mama, to be sensible and pure and workers at home and kind and be subject to the husbands. Oh, that's slavery. You talk to your daughters about God's plan? Don't have time. There's other things in the way. This is not a priority. There's other priorities. Get them educated. Be sure they're there on time for their rehearsals or whatever it may be. Why isn't this a priority? Building the home. Building the family. In Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 1, a wise woman builds her house. She builds her house. How is the list of priorities is building the family, women? A wise woman is not near as concerned about the material pursuits and accomplishments. Can my daughter dance? Can my son hit a baseball? How much are they going to make when they get a job? But rather, what kind of people are they going to be? That's the priority. Look, Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1. You know, you talk to a daddy about his son. I'm so proud of my son. He graduated at the top of his class. Or he's been selected for the best baseball player or football player or whatever. Or he's got the number one chair in the band. I'm so proud of my son. Proverbs 10:1. A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother. He may be foolish in his decisions about girls. He may be foolish in his decisions about his responsibilities to work and provide for himself. He may be foolish in his priorities, but look at the things he's accomplished. I am so proud of my son. It's not a priority that he's wise. in God's ways. And so Satan's smart. He's smart. Go ahead and take it to church. It's okay. As long as that's not a priority. Building his character is not what makes you really happy. In Ephesians 6:4, you know that verse. Fathers, train your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I'm going to do it as I have time, but that's not my most important thing. Most important thing is to work so I can build up my 401 and we can retire comfortably. Ah, that devil's smart, man. He's got traps and snares. They look so harmless, these little traps. Go ahead and put your foot in. See what happens. In fact, he's got the priorities so upset, so messed up. When they asked Jesus, "Can I divorce my wife?" He said, "What God has joined together, let no man separate." Malachi 2:16, mark it in your Bible and mark it in your heart. God said, you know, I read a little bit of an article about a famous actor this past week, just interesting to me. Very accomplished. But he had 3 wives. He couldn't keep his marriage. He said, "Boy, he was so successful." "Really? Really successful?" God said, Malachi 2:16, "I hate divorce." What's your number one priority in your family? I'm going to build this marriage. I'm going to see that my wife wants to be my wife, or my husband wants to be my husband. I'm going to cultivate love and companionship. I may have to take a different job. I may not can do the other things I want to do, but my marriage is top shelf. Devil says, you don't need to devote that kind of attention to it. Here's the second thing. Snare. Devil uses ignorance. You know, when you read Ephesians 5, how many people, I think this audience is pretty well informed on what this is talking about, but so often in the world, either people are uninformed or those who've been taught ignore what they've learned. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22, he said, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord." Verse 25, it says, "Husbands, love your wives." Guy says, "I got it. Got that one. Check that one off. What's your next point?" But wait, there's another little sentence under there. As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Oh, it's sacrificing for the welfare of my wife. Nourishing and cherishing her, not only physically, but mentally and spiritually. Oh, that's what's involved in his love. And respecting my husband. Well, I'll do what he says, but I don't like it, and he'll know I don't like it. No, as you do to Christ. Respect for his rule. Read Ephesians 5. What does it really teach? The devil's smart if he can get people not to either understand it or forget what they've learned. He can lay a snare. It's one of his schemes. Discipline. What is discipline? Boy, you talk about being ignored or abused. Over in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24, "Who spares his rod hates his son." I said, "Buddy, I got that one. I beat the skin off of you." That guy may not know the first thing about discipline. Discipline is related to the word disciple. Any discipline that's not designed to teach and to train, mold the character, not discipline. The rod here of discipline, of training, of molding a character. That's the idea. Who loves him disciplines. And then he says, diligently. It's a focus. It's a priority to him. But people don't know what discipline means. They think that's spanking a kid. You can spank a kid and not discipline him. That is a way to discipline. if done with the right motive and purpose and control and wisdom. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 10. Well, I gave you the wrong verse there. Verse 18. Discipline your son while there is hope, and do not desire his death. Say, oh, I love my son too much to discipline. No, you don't love him if you don't discipline him. If you don't want him to die spiritually and morally, discipline your son. In chapter 23, verse 13, do not hold back discipline from the child. Though you beat him with the rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with the rod, deliver his soul from Sheol. That little boy and that little girl, when their bodies die, they keep right on going. And they're going to be in one or two places. You may make the difference where that will be. Discipline. Understand what it involves. Over in Proverbs 1, we're not reading this whole section. The picture is of a woman out crying in distress. Stop and listen to me. I'll pour out my spirit on you. The spirit of wisdom and understanding and knowledge. Wisdom, knowledge, reproof, and counsel. But you know what? How she was treated? They hated her. They wouldn't pay attention. They neglected what she said. They did not choose to accept her words. They were complacent. They thought they knew enough, as it were. And then trouble came. They said, where's that woman? So I'm not listening. You can't find me now. Too late. That's what happens to families. How many people spend time reading this book, preparing themselves? We ought to prepare, shouldn't we? What if I'm supposed to teach on Sunday morning? I'd get up Sunday morning and say, let me see if I can get something together and find something somewhere. What's that going to be like? What kind of sermons would it be if a preacher does that? If you're going to be a song leader, you ought to prepare. If you're going to lead a prayer, if you're going to make these comments before the Lord's Supper, you ought to think, give some thought and time to that. What about being a parent, training your children, thinking about how you love your wife or your husband, to get some wisdom, to get some knowledge, to get some counsel, so that we'll be prepared when the storms of life come. This is a powerful one the devil uses. Apathy. Just, I don't care. You know why people say that? It won't happen to me. It won't happen to me. Yeah. Had somebody sit on one of these pews in this building, when I was teaching a class. I don't remember the exact topic, but apparently we talked about the family and marriage. That person said, it won't happen to me. I love my mate. We'll never divorce. And they divorced. That's what Peter said. Jesus says, you better be alert. You better pray. Peter says, don't worry about me, Lord. I'll never desert you. In other words, it won't happen to me. And so he didn't pray. And he wasn't alert. And he denied his master three times. Devil loves to hear you say that. Here's what you need to say. I'm going to do everything in my power so it won't happen to me. It could happen to me. My wife and I have been married over 59 years. But we know it could happen to us. There's people that have been married over 50 years that their marriages fall apart. Cultivate it. Keep cultivating it. Whether you've been married 20 years or 30 years or 50 years. I just visited with a couple. This past week, who've been married 74 years. they're still cultivating their relationship. Over in Proverbs chapter 34, 24, not going to find 34, Proverbs chapter 24. Very insightful section here about our attitude to our responsibilities. I passed by the field of the sluggard, or your version may say the lazy man. See, a lazy person is not somebody who does nothing in the book of Proverbs. A lazy person is the one that neglects the duties that he has because he don't think they're important, or he's got other things to do, or he just doesn't like them. I passed by the field of the sluggard, by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. Do you like to go weed? If you're out, if it's in the summertime and the stones are on the ground, or you want to go mix up some mortar and get the stone and put it back up there, I forget it. We'll do that another day. Tomorrow, we'll do that later. And he just doesn't take care of his vineyard. He said, I saw that. I saw a field like that. He said, I reflected on it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Now, in my version, there are parentheses, quotation marks around that section. I realize that's put there by the translator, but that's good quotation marks. That's what the lazy man says. I'm going to get to it, but not right now. I just need to sleep a little longer, okay? Tomorrow. Next week. Then your poverty will come like a robber, your want like an armed man. Your vineyard will be the same as if somebody that hated you came and wanted to destroy it. And there's somebody that hates you and wants to destroy your vineyard. But he don't have to bring another person in. He don't have to excite an unjustified love. All he's got to get you to do is just ignore it. Don't cultivate. Ignore what we're talking about today. Just continue down the path of neglect. The devil will take care of it. Do we work at cultivating our relationships with our mate? Men, do you tell your wife, boy, you look nice. Your sure hair looks good today. Thank you for cooking supper. It was good. Thank you for being the mama you are to the children. Wife, do you tell your husband, thank you for working, for not being a bum, for taking care of the car and the yard, for being kind and sweet to me? Do you ever tell them? When he gets home from work, do you make time to meet him with joy and dress like he wants you to dress and looking like he's waiting for him to see you? How do you treat your wife in the morning when you leave if she's awake? How do you treat her? How do you treat her when he gets home? I'm saying work at it. Think about it. Build a relationship. Same thing with being parents. Do we prepare ourselves to be good parents? Or just we bring them to church, put them in class, take them home? Is that it? God help us. You believe that passage, Genesis 1:31? I believe you do. After the creation, man and woman, Genesis chapter 1, God looked on what he had made and he said, it's very good. There's people that's had such bad experiences in marriage, they don't think a marriage can be good. There's women who think there's no good men. There's men who think there's no good women. They've undermined faith and confidence in what you read back here in Genesis 1. Very good. I realize a lot of marriages aren't good. It's not God's fault. God made marriage and he made it very good. If we'll follow his plans. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Timothy's preaching in the church at Ephesus. What kind of group of people is this? Go read Ephesians and you'll see. They were idolaters. They came out of the world. They practiced immorality. Timothy, you got to preach to these people to help them follow the course of righteousness. What are you going to use? He said, Timothy, all Scripture. All Scripture. That's this. That's what's written right here. It's inspired of God. And it's profitable for teaching, instruction, correction, for training in righteousness. The man of God, you, Timothy, are the teacher of the Word. Maybe thoroughly equipped to all good works. And that's why we've spent time this morning opening the book, reading from the book. We say, I believe all of that. James challenges us. James writes his letter to Christians who were very proud of their faith, actually. You see that in chapter 2 and verse 1. Very proud of their faith. But he challenges them, beginning in verse 14. What use is it, my brethren, if a man says he has faith, but he does not have works? Can that faith save him? Verse 18, someone may say, you have faith, I have works. James challenges, show me your faith. Show me your faith without your works. I'll show you my faith by my works. You believe that marriage, home, family, fatherhood, motherhood is a priority? Prove it. That's what James would say. Prove it. Faith, if it has no works, James says, is dead, being by itself. See why the devils believe and tremble. But he said, verse 24, you see that a man is justified by works and not by faith alone. Do we believe it? Does it demonstrate itself in the way that we live? James chapter 1, verse 25, he talks about looking into the mirror. Looking into the mirror of God's Word. And then what do we see and what do we do about it? We can go away and forget what it shows us. Or we can make changes. And hopefully by taking a look today in God's Holy Word, it will remind us to pay attention to and give the effort to those things that help develop and cultivate this most precious of relationships that we call the family.